From the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world, from wherever the beautiful game is played, this is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Martin Ziegler, a pleasure to have you on Beyond the Pitch. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. Look, let's start off with what's going on in this most prevalent, because I really wanted to get your opinion since you've been talking about it so much. How is this whole situation with Wembley going to improve English football? I've seen a lot of arguments in favor. I've seen a lot of arguments against it. But overall, what's really the perception of how this deal could go down with Shahid Khan?
Yeah, so I mean, you can come at this in two ways. There's one, which is a lot of the red top newspapers, the tabloids in England have reacted, saying, you know, that we're selling off the crown jewels. This is, you know. I think one of the Sun referred this morning to the fact that we're selling it to the Yanks as though that was a sort of terrible thing. So there's a sort of a school of thought or a view amongst certain people that this is a historic part of English football, shouldn't be sold off. I think the more sort of pragmatic view is actually they never used to own the old Wembley. They didn't actually own it lock, stock and barrel. So this has only really been in their ownership for about 15 years. And the first 5 years of that was building it. So they have got a huge amount of money tied up in this huge stadium. It's not bringing in a lot of money to them because they're having to pay off the debt. Actually, in 6 years' time, it would start making a profit, but it isn't at the moment. So there's a big, big problem in England about facilities. The pitches here are terrible. If you look anywhere on the continent, the USA, anywhere, the actual surface that young people learn to play on is so much better in those countries than it is in England. And I think the FA think this is an opportunity. We can get £500 million just to spend on improving facilities and pitches.
It's interesting you say that, Martin, because of the fact that all of these issues are something that you know, really have haunted the FA in terms of maintenance. You know, I think that the debt that they've incurred in the past few years with just the maintenance of it alone, and also the reconstruction that, of course, went sky high in overspending, that also has a major factor too, because it kind of wipes the slate clean. Correct.
Yes, exactly. So they've been paying huge amounts of interest over the last 12 years. They have already had it put in despite it being less than, it's only 11 years old, they're already having to put in a major structural program roof because of the design faults when it was built. They don't have to cover all of that cost themselves. Some of it's covered by the construction insurers, but some of it they do. And it's not just the cost, it's the actual the administration, the resource, they're going to get the inspectors. So it's a real headache. And should they really be spending, I think they've worked out, the FA work out, they spend 20% of their manpower and their work time in running Wembley, and should they be using that time and resources better elsewhere? And I think that the prevailing view amongst them is, yes, this is a sort of once in a lifetime opportunity to, you know, we can put in, you know, 1,500 artificial pitches across the country. That will have a transformative effect. I mean, you know, anyone who's got kids who play on a Saturday or Sunday morning, this is absolutely, you know, the most of the pitches, especially when it starts raining after Christmas time, they just become it's like playing in a ploughed field.
I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, you go from one, I guess you can say, from one evil to another. You go from you know, pretty much playing on mud to going to artificial pit, you know, to an artificial pitch. You know, that's kind of a deadly sin in of itself in some parts of the world. But it's interesting you say that. But also what adds to it as far as the drama is concerned is the issue of you know, how is who is going to play there? how many times are they going to be playing their course? The factor of the NFL coming in, because it's not just anybody that's you know, putting in, you know, close to 500 million pounds. It's just an owner that happens to own an NFL franchise, and of course the push that the NFL is making to try and, you know, really become more Europeanized, if you will.
Yes, so Shahid Khan, of course, is the man with the vision. I think he's every time he's brought Jacksonville Jaguars over to London, it's been a money spinner. They've actually been, you know, he thinks, and actually, it's sort of financial terms, it's even propped up the Jaguars, that kind of income. So I think he envisages a scenario where they're going to play quite a few games in London and quite a few in the States. And this is something that, you know, when you talk to people who are in charge of sport in this country, the Minister of Sport, Tracy Crouch, the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, they're really, really keen to get this sort of NFL franchise, and because it is such a sort of, it just gets so much attention. There's definitely a big group of NFL fans in this country who pay a lot of money and basically go mad to watch NFL games in London, and they want to tap into that even more. So, yeah, I think this is going to be a sort of revolutionary moment, and we will see in the NFL season, if everything goes through, a lot more NFL games in what would be the first half of the football season. So we're talking August to December. There won't be any England matches there. That's part of the deal. The England internationals will be played on the road. They go to Old Trafford, Leeds, Liverpool, wherever. And then they will go back to the normal football calendar after Christmas, so from January to June.
We're here with Martin Ziegler, man, that really is able to enlighten us with his words over at the Times, a guy that I definitely recommend you follow. Let's switch it a little bit, because, of course, yesterday was a great chance, or actually, as we're recording on Friday, it's, you know, the match I'm talking about, of course, on Thursday, the Europa League match between Atletico Madrid and Arsenal over in London. Do you see Arsenal out already? Because they truly and honestly gave Atletico Madrid what, you know, many have considered their best shot. I mean, they really had him against the ropes. They were a man down, Atletico were, and they still weren't able to get that knockout blow, and then Atleti comes in and scores the away goal.
Yeah, so I'll put my cards on the table. I am actually an Arsenal supporter, historically.
I'm killing you with this, right? I don't mean to purposely, it wasn't that I scheduled this, but
I could be accused of looking at things through rose-tinted spectacles, but I actually think, I actually don't think it's a bad thing in a funny sort of way. My sons were watching with me, they came mad at the end, all sorts of swear words coming out, and I was saying, look, you know, Arsenal's problem, Arsenal's problem is when they go up against an expensive side, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, mm-hmm. Manchester City, and then they end up conceding sort of four or five goals. That's always been their problem, because defensively they're a bit suspect. So I actually think they go to Atletico Madrid, who are not an expensive side, they're a defensive side. Mm-hmm. Atletico Madrid are going to basically defend what they've got. They've got a fantastic defensive record in Madrid. So they're going to sit back. They're not going to take any risk in Arsenal, and that's going to suit Arsenal, because, you know, if it gets to 0-0 at half time, Arsenal don't have a problem scoring goals. I can easily see them getting a goal, and then suddenly Atletico Madrid starting to panic. So I think I'm quite confident that there's still everything to play for. I'd be much more concerned if they played against an expensive side, won 1-0 at home, and then went away, because I think they would struggle at this sort of game. Actually, it might suit them in a funny sort of way, because their defensive frailties won't be such an issue.
Mm-hmm. I mean it's interesting. It's interesting that you say that, because of, I mean, if there's a team that has the best goal differential in La Liga, it's Atleti. I mean, they've still been able to score 54 goals, which is not something to really sneeze at when it comes to it. I mean, and of course, you know, with Diego Simeone and his his, I guess for lack of a better term, pragmatism, if you will.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it does go a little bit over the edge, but you do have players that can really create offensively, that can really, and he said it yesterday at the press conference, sometimes we live and die by the counterattack. But when they're able to establish themselves, you know, when you start to see players like Thomas Partey, when you see Griezmann, when you see, when you start to see players like Saul Niguez get more offensively involved, they could really cause some problems for Arsenal. Or is that the way that in England they're seeing it? It's like, well, you know, they're a team that just defends. They're, you know, they're not a team that really goes attacks that much. How are they seeing it right now?
Well, I think they're seen as a very strong side and a very, very difficult side to break down. Mm-hmm. And with some technically excellent players. I mean, Griezmann, fantastic player. They've got wonderful defence. But I think there's a... If it was 0-0 and they were playing at Atletico, I think actually... In some ways, it might be more dangerous for Arsenal because Atletico would—they know they have to win. The fact that Atletico know they don't have to score if they don't concede themselves, I think there's a sort of whatever team you are, there's a psychological factor that you will, you know, you will protect what you have and you won't take any risks. I think that's actually can be quite a dangerous thing against a team like Arsenal who are. Everything really is about sort of space and movement and passing and not. I mean, the big problem that Wenger's had for the last, at least the last 10 years, probably is the last 13 years, is that defensively they've never really quite got it right. So if they don't have to worry too much defensively, and say if Atletico, if they get an early goal, are winning 2-1. They're still in the same position. Arsenal still only scored one goal, the match is in the balance again. So it's I suggested this on Twitter yesterday. Yeah. Everybody laughed at me. Hundreds of people obviously have never even heard of. Just say you're completely mad. You know, Atletico haven't let in a goal for whatever it is, 110 games. It's not quite that many, is it? But. They've not let in a goal at home, I think, for, is it 11 matches on the trot? Something like that.
Yeah, no, it's something like that. I mean, well, they haven't, I think they've only lost one match at home so far. I mean, ever since they moved over to the Wanda. That tells you a great deal about the team in and of itself, the way it's struck. I mean, and they were a pretty strong team over, at the Vicente Calderon. So it's just what they've been able to do, in their own backyard, that's made such a big difference to me as far as what they've been able to really create. I mean, obviously on the road, they become even more defensive. So, I mean, what you've been hearing in the Spanish press is mostly when they come back to the Wanda, that's going to be a different story. I mean, if you start looking, and I mean, the only match that they've lost, they've only lost two matches at home since February, and I just wanted to look it up. They've only lost at home three times, and those four times. One to Barcelona, the other one to Villarreal, Chelsea, and then Sevilla, in Copa del Rey, as a matter of fact. I mean, that shows you, some incredible stuff. And, of course, the last time they were scored on was back in January against Girona in La Liga. I mean, in La Liga and Europa League, let's also say. So, I mean, it's all these things put together. But, I mean, it's definitely going to be one of those matches that's going to be enthralling, to say the least.
It is. I mean, Arsenal are a team that they create lots of opportunities. I think another of their issues is they're not clinical enough. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, 28 shots, I think. Mm-hmm. 28 shots. Which is, and they score one goal. That's just... But occasionally they have, it kind of goes right for them. It did actually in the last match when they're playing away against CSKA in Moscow. That was an example. They played really badly, but actually, they still create quite a few chances. And that on that match they got the rub of the green. They're a bit lucky.
They are a team that does create a lot, but the ball just has to bounce for them the right way on several occasions for them to end up getting the win. I mean, unfortunately, that's been the case for them not just this season.
Exactly. A long time. A long time. So I think it, you know, if they get a bit of luck, then I think they can do it. They need a bit of luck, but I think whoever wins will probably go and win the whole thing.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I tend to agree on that one. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad going away present for Arsene Wenger for sure. And you know, I want to have you on. We can just talk about Wenger and his legacy at another time. I'd rather just kind of like, you know, look at it from a more cold standpoint, if you will. Finally, I know you have to go. I wanted to know what you were seeing about this whole Liverpool phenomenon. And now people are saying, you know what? This Liverpool side, I guess for the, you know, for the first 70 plus minutes until Mohamed Salah comes out, you're like, this team could probably beat Bayern Munich or Real Madrid in the Champions League final. Is that the sensation many people are getting?
Well, yeah, I probably didn't think that, say, a month ago. If you asked me a month ago, I'd have said no. But
don't feel so bad, because I didn't think, I mean, honestly, who thought Liverpool was going to be in the Champions League semifinals in August?
I know.
I wasn't there
for the Roma match, but I have been to some big Champions League matches at Anfield. I think it's definitely one of the best atmospheres that you get at any match. There's a special, I don't know, the fans seem to really turn it on for those night matches. It's very intense, close to the pitch. Everyone's really up for it, and I've seen so many visiting teams just freeze. So it's probably slightly different in a final, where it's, you know, you don't have that Anfield advantage. But having seen the way they play, part of me thinks I just do not know how why Roma defended like that. I mean, it's just they know how many goals Mo Salah scored this season. They don't need any warning, do they? Yeah, but you know, time and again, they were just left one on one against a sort of central defender who had about half his pace. So, but you can't argue them. They attack so quickly, and they are. I mean, Mane, I also think, is an excellent player. I know he missed a few chances before they actually got some goals on Tuesday night, but. Attacking wise, really, really, really sensational to watch as well. Love watching them attack. Yeah. I just wonder if they come up against Real Madrid. You know, they're such an experienced team. I think they're much stronger defensively. I think they're much more adaptable defensively. They've got more speed in defence than Roma have. I think it'll be a tough ask for Liverpool to beat Real Madrid, but hey, you know, nobody now can say they haven't got a chance.
No, absolutely not. I mean, they've still got to
not concede three goals in Rome, haven't they? So
that's the big question that everybody is making, and I kind of say, well, you know, I don't think it's going to be that easy, because if you look at the first leg between Roma and Barcelona, I mean, Barca didn't play that well. Barca really weren't that overwhelming, kind of team that just steamrolled past Roma. I mean, it was, you know, 4-1, but, you know, two own goals, a penalty here and there. And really, that's what set the tone, set the difference in that match. But, I mean, Roma, they faced Liverpool, and Liverpool were, I mean, light years much better than what Barcelona were able to put on the pitch at home. So I think that's where the difference lies, that this Liverpool team can go into Roma and maybe score two, maybe three goals.
You can't do the miracle happening twice, can you?
with Roma. That too.
Yeah. They've had one absolutely miraculous result. Does it really happen again? Well, you know, it would be incredible if it did, but I can't see it happening. But so I think Liverpool, You think back to that, you know, when they won the Champions League back in Istanbul, when they, you know, they came back against AC Milan, and the only thing about the sort of, although Real Madrid are obviously a huge task to get past if they get to the final, I have this sort of feeling that, you know, is this Liverpool's year? Is this the sort? There is a slight feeling of that Istanbul victory about this, and Klopp is, you know, he's an excellent manager, and he's got the fans are so sort of fervent and passionate right behind the team in a way they've probably not been since back then. So it's all building up fantastically.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that, because there is this vibe around this Liverpool team that really has created this, you know, this roller coaster of emotions, if you will, as far as this club is concerned. Martin, it's been a pleasure. I don't want to hold you up anymore. I know you're extremely busy, and I just want to thank you for being on the show. Where can people follow you? What are you up to? What are you looking to be doing in the next couple of months, as far as the Times is concerned, or other projects that you have going on?
Sure. What do you follow? I'm on Twitter, Martin Ziegler, Martin with a Y. Obviously we're building up to the 2026 World Cup vote. We're going to the FIFA Congress in Moscow, and then the World Cup. So, yeah, I think a lot of focus on the World Cup, the United bid against Morocco. This time last year, everybody thought, well, this, you know, it's only going one place. Now Morocco really come into it, not helped by Donald Trump, that's for sure.
Those tweets really do a lot of good for the United bit, I bet. You know, they must be cringing right now.
No, I think they're really cringing. I mean, it's skirting with breaching the FIFA's rules about political interference in World Cup bids. But I think more significantly, his sort of remarks about smaller nations in Africa and the Caribbean really, really hurt the bid. I think the African nations are now almost entirely got behind Morocco. They're a big confederation. If Asia also do the same thing, then suddenly it's a real problem for the United bid.
FIFA. Even if they pick off just a couple of the European countries.
Yeah, well, they've already got Spain and France due to historical links to Morocco, so they've already come out and said that they're supporting Morocco.
So it's
a big problem. FIFA, Infantino, I'm pretty sure he would love it to go to United States, Mexico, and Canada, just because of the commercial revenues, and I think it would suit him in TV, everything. So he's got a headache. I suppose the big question is, will it actually go to the vote, or will the FIFA try and find some way of stopping the Morocco bid going ahead? Because, I mean, when you look at it from a very pragmatic point of view, a 48-team World Cup in Morocco and the infrastructure they've got, I'm now of the view, actually, that unless you shouldn't be spending billions and billions and billions on new stadiums, because I just don't think they're going to be used ever again. So from that point of view, I think it would be a bit of a waste of money. And if the Moroccan government wants to invest so strongly in their infrastructure, they should spend it on other projects. But
that's a topic I'd love to get into more, because I've already had a couple of journalists from Morocco talking to me about that. But I think, you know, as we get closer to the vote, that's going to be a tremendously hot topic as well. But, I'm going to save all those bullets for them, if you will.
Very good.
Proverbial city. I'm going to have you back, definitely, for that. And, on Twitter, Martin Ziegler. And you have, you're going to Russia, right?
Yes. Yeah, I'm there for World Cup. So.
Cool. All right. Well.
I'll be based in Moscow. So, looking forward to that. I'm sure it'll be very newsworthy.
Oh, okay. That's going to tend to be a very interesting World Cup, to say the least. Martin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, and talk to you soon.
Okay.